Oliver Irschitz. He has a company in Vienna called the Priotas. And they're a specialized small-sized company on interaction design. And I think some of the students have been there already and made some contact.
Yeah.
And we know Oliver from different projects, but we actually never really met in person. So it's a great pleasure that you are here and took the time to come here. And we are very looking forward to your interactive projects.
Well, thanks a lot for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here and to show the stuff. Yeah, it's a little bit strange to talk English in Austria, but it's okay. I have heard it's a really international place here, and this is even better. Yeah. My company, or it's more a label, it's called Peyote. I also call it Cross Design Concepts because I'm trained as an architect. I started architecture in Vienna at the Academy of Fine Arts, and I started to work in interactive 3D and in media projects with the start of my diploma. And from there on, I came out of university and started to find a company right away. I never bothered to work for somebody else because I had so many things to do. And so we started this brand, and this brand now starts to become nicer and more successful, and we're doing a lot of different projects. And we come more, I wouldn't call myself an artist, I would rather say I'm a creative, artistic working person, and we use artistic concepts to make commercial projects. And I'm aiming in the direction of really developing products, what can be multiplied and can be used and make sense to use. That's one of the most important goals I have myself, to make projects that make sense. They're not just beautiful, or sometimes it's enough to be beautiful, but like I will show you projects for television, for broadcast industry, I will show you projects for medical rehabilitation purposes, and there it's really interesting to work because there is sense. You can see that you help people, you can see that somebody's profiting of it, and this is really nice. To start my presentation, I wanted to show you a little bit what is Peyote, why I picked this name, and what we are doing. So Peyote, maybe somebody knows it, it's a cactus, actually from Middle America, and there is an essence called mescaline. It's inside, and it's kind of psychedelic, so it expands your mind, it allows you to kind of travel out of your body and then to change your perception a little bit. And I think this is a thing what also virtual reality is doing, or more or less. So you have the capability to expand your mind to explore different realities, what you wouldn't be able to do in just a normal physical realm. Yeah. And so Peyote is a label, more or less. So I try to label work. I do a lot of collaborations with different artists and different people, and this more or less is all happening under the label of Peyote. But everybody, of course, can place his own name as a participant in the project, so I try to keep it a little bit like in the music industry to produce things. Yeah. So I'm more or less a producer for these 3D projects, and I do it always together with all different kind of people, what is just needed for the project, because in this field, like so many disciplines come together, like video, sound, programming, and all kind of things. So it's very hard to do many projects all by yourself, and you're not very scalable if you do so. So I decided to make a platform out of it. And I'm trying to find all different kind of fields where this kind of interactive media can be applied. And then I try to find places where it makes sense to come up with solutions, products, and whatever. Yeah. So as you can read here a little bit, we work a lot between man and machine interfaces, and especially to interface complex applications like computer graphics very intuitively for everyday people, like in public space or semi-public space. So there you have to find solutions that are really simple and intuitive to allow people to have a quick experience, like you have a couple of seconds to intrigue somebody and then to get his attention and to really use your installation, and if it's not working immediately, they leave and it's just a failure. And so this is one of the major goals we are meeting all the time, to reduce complexity to the maximum, actually. Yeah. And Yeah, so we have all different disciplines, like I mentioned before, what are coming in there. Like I work with architects, with designers, a lot with artists, also classical artists, what come from the painting side or whatever. And like programmers, of course. We also did our own hardware development, what I will show soon. And so a lot of different things are coming together. So I see there is a lack of usability in everyday application. So the more you deal with different devices, the more you figure out how trashy they are actually. And I think there is a big field for all of us to come up with new solutions to make things easier, accessible, and more functional. So I'm for a fluid integration of applications in the real world. So that's why I also call the label cross-design concepts, because I always try to make design in the real world, like physical design, in combination with the virtual design. So it's a fluid kind of whole thing what is coming out afterwards. Yeah. And also the design itself, I experience is very important, because you attract the people to your application. So if you just have a monitor, a keyboard, a mouse, sometimes people are just not going for it because they are afraid, and they are afraid that they can't handle the computer and whatever. So I try to get rid of all those things. And to get rid of all those things, we had a need. Like I started 10 years ago, there was no hardware solutions available on the market what would allow us to interact naturally by movements with big screen projections. And well, to achieve this, we decided to develop our own hardware. And on the left hand side, you see a picture of the second version, what actually is kind of a light curtain. I call it LIP, light input device. And you can make frames out of these things. So chains, there is on the left hand side is the transmitter, receiver, and on the other side are the infrared transmitters. And actually what we're doing is we make a very simple matrix out of infrared light, and we're tracking it with like 50-60 hertz, and we make frames around. And if you put your finger in there, you have an intersection in X and Y direction, and that's how you get the coordinates. We also can scan two points at the same time, so we can do a two-handed interaction with all kind of displays. It doesn't matter if you interact with projections, if you interact with plasma or LCD walls or with LED walls, even you can interact with all kind of medias from a minimum size from 20 to 20 centimeters, what actually doesn't make a lot of sense, but this is one size of one circuit board. And you can go up to 6 by 8 meters, 6 by, it depends, yeah. So, but you can get pretty big, how I will show you later on.
Question, you sure. Said
1998. There I started. No, 1998 I made my diploma. 1999, 2000 I started to develop on the hardware. It took anyway 3 years till it was more or less available. I always had to run for money. It costed so much. So it was in between always the time. Yes, I had patents, and I have to say I had, because there was a bankruptcy in between as well. So there I lost the patents. But nobody cares actually, yeah. So be faster and better than the others, and we don't need patents. Yeah. You anyway can't afford it, because the big companies, they are always more potential than you. Here in the video you see a little the functionality of this iframe, what you can do with it and how it works. So you make these frames, and then you have the scanning, and actually by RS-232 or by USB connection, you give those tracked coordinates to the application, either in the Windows system or by UDP. So you can also bring it directly in there. So this is catchy, because everybody knows it and likes it. Yeah. So the Google Earth application, and I think this is also a nice way to interface it naturally and easy. So you can provide this kind of interface maybe in a semi-public space to everyday people to play with it, yeah. And like you see, the C-axis is also very important for the intuitiveness, because sometimes, like if you want to walk forward, intuitive would be to go forward. Like in the beginning it was always, if you go forward you have to move up, what actually is kind of a translation in the brain needed already, so it's abstraction. And but then we figured out how to deal with that, so we added cameras. And so we do now sometimes either just camera tracking, hand tracking, or a combination out of camera tracking and this iframe tracking. One thing why this iframe is so reliable and good because it is reliable. It's hardware, you switch it on, and it's running, and it's doing what it's supposed to do. So you have issues concerned of light, of course, but not so many like in tracking, and like you probably also know a little bit about camera tracking and computer vision, and so there's always a big issue of the surrounding light, environment lighting, and so it's really hard to use it like on fairs or for systems would have to be reliable. Yeah. And so this is just a little show. What I also did, like I started actually out to move the interaction away from the screen, because we interfaced very big screens, and to have an overview of the big screen, you need a certain distance, of course, to overview it. And so I made like small iframes where you could like minority report, like just by movements, kind of drive the application. Then it was interesting. I think I was a little bit too early with this development at the time, because nobody needed interaction for big displays at the time. Then we decided, okay, nobody needs that big, so let's get smaller. We redesigned the whole hardware, what you see in this picture actually. So you see that the old socket plates, what are the big ones actually, and the new ones, they're just half the size anymore. There's all SMD parts on there, so it's connected by USB now, so we improved scanning rates, and so it's very powerful now in the meantime. And it's just funny, it came out, it was there, it was available, all of a sudden the need for really big displays came up there. So now we're kind of trying to get the maximum out of it again, to really be able to do the really big displays again. Yeah. And, well, there is a little movie which shows you the capabilities of the new hardware now. So this is also what shows drag and drop easily. And we also can use two hands to do like simple movements like zooming in, zooming out, or rotation of things. Yeah. So this is one thing what we can do with it, and what actually is pretty unique, because, well, there are all those multi-touch techniques you probably know, but they don't work like in front of a plasma wall like this, or they don't work in front of an LED wall, so you need back projection and you have the infrared tracking from behind. So you're very flexible, and it's very easy to reinstall or to retrofit like an interaction to an existing display. Yeah. And like this technique is now interested, that the people from broadcast industry are interested, because they have all those big video walls in their studios, and now they're just starting to think about it and to figure out that it might be interesting to have the presenters drive their presentation themselves instead of standing off a green wall and actually not seeing what you do except on a monitor. This is just a functional example what shows you that this is possible and how you can work with it. Yeah. And the nice thing is you can make it like with really big walls too.
But you always need your hardware frame.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, there is always a frame around, yeah, in this issue.
It's just working for one person, is it?
It's working for one person, two hands. And also not individually, so you can't track 2 points completely individually, because you have issues like optical issues. If you do like that, you don't know anymore. You're occluding yourself, and you have 2 points. Sometimes it's if it's jumping, you don't know, is it these 2 points or these 2 points? So you're defining more or less a rectangle. So this is a physical issue we can't solve with this kind of technology. Yeah. But I also figured out in the meantime, everybody's talking about now extensive multi-touch interfaces. Actually, nobody provided a solution where it's needed yet. So you always see like, okay, Jeff Hahn is doing lines with 10 fingers. Very sexy, but what for? So, okay, we can do it. And the thing is, most of the things, you have two hands, so you need 2 points. And most of the applications I figured out so far, it's enough to have 2 points and make intelligent applications what are using the input. So that's most of the time also this Microsoft Surface tables and all those things, they pretend to be very capable, but actually it's kind of nice toys, expensive toys, but don't do very much. So here what I want to show you is the combination of both things. Yeah. So we started to connect stereo camera vision, what you see on the right hand side, with this iframe. So now we have very extended capabilities. So there you see a little bit how the tracking is working. So that's it. Yeah, the two cameras seeing the hand from above. We did this system together with the Technical University. There is the Institute for Interactive Media Systems, IMS, it's called, Professor Breitenheder. and we kind of looking for certain colors in the skin of the hand. And so the system is working completely without markers and everything, so it's kind of registering due to the colors of the hand certain points. Then we put a plane into these points and we put a vertical vector on it. So what we get out of it is X, Y, Z coordinates and rotation of the hand itself. And if we connect it like with the device I showed before here, we have actually 2 points. So we're tracking the hand, X, Y, Z and rotation, and we also in the iframe we're tracking the elbow just in X, Y. So we actually nearly can reconstruct the whole movement of the whole arm. So you use inverse kinematics to reconstruct the movement, and therefore you can do pretty complex movements already and can drive pretty complex applications. What might be interesting for medical applications where you might be able to exploit that.
Have you actually collaborated with FutureLab on their book that you
This Ars Libris, No, I didn't, I collaborated sometimes with them. They wrote the drivers and things like a connection from the iframe to Unreal, to the Unreal game engine and things like that, but the book, no. Mm-hmm. Well, there is a setup just what is very nice with the iframe. This was one of my most prestigious projects I was invited to do. This was actually the World Trade Center on Ground Zero in New York, where we were kind of interfacing applications to show. It was a marketing tool for Mr. Silverstein, who wanted to sell his new tower, and they just showed the architectural visions for Ground Zero, what you could do, and you were able to drive this application by hand movements. Well, this is actually the first thing I built, but I always like to show it because it's still a nice thing. It's the iTube. It was actually a monster, so it was the first thing. We didn't care very much for transportation issues and whatever, we just wanted to build it. And well, this weighed 6.5 tons and was made out of steel and aluminum. And it was actually collapsible, so it did what it looks like. So it's like a telescope, and you fold it like this, and then you can put it on a truck and bring it all over the places. That was the idea, but we never expected that we might have to ship it by plane or somewhere abroad. And this was just a monster. We were invited at SIGGRAPH in San Diego, and they invited us to show this iTube at Emerging Technologies. And well, it was a little bit difficult to bring this over there. So we
succeed to ship all this.
Yes, but I didn't ship this one. We developed the light version. So this is the next picture you see. This was actually a version I did out of a cardboard MDF. So this kind of a sandwich panel, but it's very light and strong. And we made a nice collapsible system, not like this anymore. I liked the mechanism of this telescopic system very much, but actually it was just for us, you know. Nobody saw it. You would have to make an event out of the setup of the iTube that somebody sees how you expand it. You spend so much money and effort to do this and nobody sees it. Yeah. So this was just a pity. Yeah. So we decided to skip this, okay. And we were too much in love with it, yeah, so we made a collapsible system. You just had modules and you plugged it together. Afterwards you put it in transport cases and crates, and then we flew it over, yeah. So it was still 1 ton, but SIGGRAPH took care of that. So this is actually SIGGRAPH here. There we also had once a tracking system. This was a collaborative project with Flavio Sparacino from the MIT Media Lab and a French artist, Priam Chivot and Mathieu Leclos. They made a nice, a little bit surreal 3D model of New York City, and you could fly through it in the iTube just by moving your hands and doing the things. And this was actually a very nice application we could show there, yeah.
And the people who keep all these things, I mean, was this mostly exhibitions or private people? What's such a big display?
Well, this actually was a private luxury, I would say, yeah. So I never made money out of the iTube, yeah. So I made all the publicity out of it. So I got a lot of prizes for that. All the prizes I got for this thing. We got invited for shows, and so everybody wanted to have it, yeah. But nobody was renting it, actually, yeah. So it was a good thing to do it, and that's why I show it, because actually it brought me up a little bit, so step by step, just made me enter the market, let's say like that, yeah. And like SIGGRAPH, yeah, we were lucky, they had a budget and they paid for the transport, yeah, they wanted to have it. So this was, yeah, it's okay. And okay, this is another project that we just recently finished. This is in the Crystal Worlds, Swarovski in Wattens, so the headquarter of them. And there is Mr. André Heller doing this ice Kristallwelten, and we were invited to make an interactive installation in a porch. And if it's running, yeah, it's running, the video. So what we're doing there, actually, we're projecting with 5 projectors from above the picture, and we do the motion tracking by 4 cameras, infrared cameras. We have big infrared spotlights, what kind of illuminating the whole porch in infrared. And yeah, what it does actually, you leave crystal traces once you move through it. This is fully multi-user, so as many people as they want can move through, and it works pretty nice. This is done with V4. I don't know if you know this software. Oh, you have it here, yeah. Uh-huh. So this is, I like this tool very much because it's very powerful and more or less easy to implement complex setups like that without programming too much yourself. So like here is kind of a stream of particles what is flowing, and you create these crystals in real time, and the particles start to interact with these crystals, and they start to diminish after a certain time, and the whole thing is accompanied by a sound installation what is also reacting to the movements. Also the light inside for this crystal wall to the side is kind of connected by DMX and is moving with you. So it's always kind of the visitor what is driving the application, and the visitor is even able or capable to play with it. Yeah. So you can make, like, if you move around, you can play with the particles because they always collide and interact with the crystals. And yeah, it's
the
they like
content,
it.
The artistic content, was the audition, or did you have to collaborate with Hella?
Well, the collaboration with Hella was like he was, before the opening, he was walking through it and said hello. and he said, maybe, can we make this a little bit more blue? So, this, yeah, that's the collaboration with Mr. Hella. You hardly see him, yeah, and it's better that you don't. Yeah. No, we were completely free. We could do, yeah, of course, some people were kind of trying to move us, but I had a good wire with Mr. Braun. Actually, Andreas Braun is the head of the Crystal Worlds, and yeah, he was supporting the project. And also the chief, like Markus Langes, he's the CEO of Swarovski. He's very young, he's 32, and he's a very cool guy and very interested in artistic things and cultural things, so he was also supporting it very much, the project. So we could pretty much do what we wanted to. And from this project, now new projects arose, so like a German energy company came, it's called Vattenfall, and now we're doing interactive floor projections for them in Berlin and in Hamburg. So there is a use for those things, and they're always coming more and more. This is also like an older project. I developed it in the beginning of 2000. It's called the EyePoint. So this was actually I recognized once we built the EyeTube that the EyeTube is a nice toy, but you probably won't be able to drive a company based on this thing. So we recognized there was a need for a more commercial product what would enable us to have revenue, yeah, because this is kind of what it is in running a company, you need revenue. At the time where we built the EyeTube, we got a lot of money from the governments, like technology support, and also I was financed with venture capital at this time. So everything came in what was needed to do all those development, because they are quite expensive. But, well, all of a sudden there was a need for revenue, so we came up with this table. And we started to rent it, like companies are on big fairs, they are renting those things and using it on their booths. to display their communicative needs, whatever. Yeah. And well, recently I was able to build a new table. I call this iTable. This iTable more is a concept. Yeah, so interactive tables. I just stay in the naming what I started like 8 years ago. This is from Mercedes-Benz. This was actually a prototype we were invited to develop for a new point of sale concept, what they're planning to do. So they have in mind, if it gets through, to really install tables like that in all their showrooms. And so customers from Mercedes for the cars, they will be able to use this tool to configure. So everybody's probably familiar with the car configurators, what are already in the internet and whatever. What we added here is kind of a tangible interface where we also try to... to use the real materials to actually allow the customer to feel the leather. He puts the leather on this camera tracked surface on the right hand side, and the car turns in this color, or the wheels and everything.
Das Point of Sale Konzept der Zukunft. So wird der Produktberatungsprozess zum Erlebnis. Der Showroom 2.0 ermöglicht die Emotionalisierung des Point of Sale.
Here we did a cooperation with a guy from Graz. He's doing this MRI interface. Actually, we use that on the right-hand side where you have markers on the objects.
Der Anwender hat durch Auflage verschiedener Fahrzeugmodelle und Lackmuster alle denkbaren Möglichkeiten der intuitiven Konfiguration seines Wunschfahrzeugs. Alternativ kann auch die Touchscreen-Funktion zur Auswahl benutzt werden. Mit Hilfe von haptischen Elementen kann navigiert werden, zum Beispiel mit einem Plexiglaszylinder. Damit stehen dem Nutzer virtuell alle Fahrzeugvarianten zur Verfügung. Und das in bestmöglicher visueller Qualität. Jederzeit frei dreh- und zoombar.
How are you tracking the position of the mini car?
The Showroom 2.0 verbindet mit Visualisierungsszenarien.
There are markers underneath, but actually kind of defined by shape and color. And there is a camera, like a standard camera under this glass. So the glass is semi-transparent, so the camera can see through. And we're actually kind of tracking the movements of these markers. Yeah. So they're unique markers, so you always have an ID and you know, okay, if you put that, that's this letter, and then you can track the movement. Mm-hmm. Pardon?
Is it those rectangle markers that you use, or did you make your own system?
No, this system, we used a system from Graz. There is a guy down there who is marketing this, and this is called mixed reality interface. They call it MRI. Yeah, and but we also use it. No, he's actually he's Thomas Kinsley is his name, and his company is Commerz. It's called. Yeah, you can see it on the website commerz.at, and he's doing more complex interaction based on the whole same system. So he has also changeable markers and things like that. What he's tracking, and it's quite nice. Yeah. And but also like V4, there are the markers included. Yeah, they have. I forgot the name. I always forget the name. How they're called, but they are already included. And the next project we also do with the V4 markers. Yeah, because we don't need so much interaction with the markers. More or less, for me, it's interesting that you have something what you can put in your hands. So what is very familiar to everyday people. So they have no barrier to touch it, and they can touch the real material and. It's a good way also for starting applications and things like that, because you don't need icons and double click. You put something here, there, and it comes up. And yeah. And yeah, there are also walls. So in the meantime, yeah, we're having tables, we're having floors, we're having walls now. And these are the things what I mentioned before for broadcast industry. Like I'm partnering with two companies there. One is Visarty. They are a world market leader actually for motion on-air graphics, 2D and 3D. And Barco is a maybe you're familiar with Barco. It's actually the world leader in high-end display systems. They make the most expensive projectors probably on the market, and LED walls and all kind of things. And they have those cube walls, what actually are used for these displays in the studios. So they are little back projection cubes actually, what are stacked. And then you can make all kind of huge displays. And VSRT is driving it, yeah. So they're delivering the engines, very powerful OpenGL renderers. And they're driving actually, that's why it's also called, you see there are million pixels. So there is 8 times HD. So each display is driven by 1920 by 1200. And yeah, you can add it up as much as you want. So you have a renderer, also a machine. So like if you have 8 cube elements, you have 8 renderers to control machines. So 10 machines driving this wall. And I put the iframe around, and so it gets interactive. So actually you have an interactive display in the full size there. You can see it here on the video a little bit. And what they're working on and what they have in mind is actually they try to introduce this in the studios to give like the presentators the option really to use an interactive display to moderate or to illustrate the content and the talk what they do. Yeah. And but it's a long time. It always I'm trying to get into this market since 1.5 years already. So they are huge projects and they take forever because
too many people involved.
The main problem is that you sell a whole concept there. So I don't just sell the hardware for interaction. They have to come up with a completely new format. You know, like they have to work out the content. They have to update software. They need a new version of VSRT. They need a presentator who is capable and feels comfortable doing this. Life, because I also was not aware that this is so much an issue. If somebody like of the presentators, if you click twice and it doesn't work, they kick it out. Yeah. So maybe one time if it doesn't work, it's okay. If it happens 2 or 3 times, they're not working with this tool anymore. Yeah, because they're live on air and they just feel not comfortable with something. Yeah, and also like sometimes it's difficult even. Yeah, if you're talking and if you're focused and concentrated on the content on the talk itself, and then you have to think, oh, I have to press and I have to move and I have to do this. So
yeah,
they're overwhelmed. Yeah. So and I wonder. I sometimes they're planning like 2 months rehearsal to train their presentators to be able to moderate on an interactive wall. So it's really interesting. Yeah.
So they can talk better than they can interact.
Yeah, they can actually, yeah. And that's also like I mentioned before, why everything has to be so easy, I figured out. So sometimes you think, okay, this is no problem for somebody, everybody can use that. But wrong, nobody. And that's the thing, they don't dare sometimes to even touch the wall because they think they mess up something or they make something wrong. And you always have to provide somehow that they don't, that there is not an option to be embarrassed somehow, yeah? Because if you're standing in front of an audience and there is something happening strange, it looks bad for you. And the people who are kind of using those tools, they don't want that, of course, yeah. And, well, there are many markets for these huge displays now, but many markets what I don't like very much. There's military, and military has always money and use for things like that. Broadcast. And, well, there is also fairs, big fairs, so like entertainment, of course, yeah. So there's a huge market for this, yeah. Also LED walls, so we did the same concept also based on LED walls, like there was a press conference from the German Telecom in Berlin, and like the one of the CEOs used the wall to present his numbers and things like that. So they start to figure out that this is another option to use PowerPoint, yeah. So actually, what we do there, we make little flash applications and we just substitute PowerPoint. So they don't stand there with their laptops and they start to like it because they move on a stage freely. They don't hide behind a desk like just clicking it. And they can insinuate it more. So they get more into motion and they get around. And it's also like on TV and it's for presentation. So I think it's a more vivid way to talk to the people, and it's anyway most of the time the problem that people fall asleep because somebody is kind of talking. So, and I think this is a way to come over this. Yeah. So the last chambre, actually, what I want to show to you is the medical field. So I started to work there, like, I suppose 3 years ago, something like that. And actually it was a straightforward approach because we could use as well our prototypes, as well as the games, or the applications we had already for training with patients. We mostly work for the moment with stroke patients who had strokes and have disabilities afterwards, like they are partly paralyzed, like half-sided paralyzed, or they have a neglect syndrome, which actually means that their viewing field moves to a certain side of the room, so they don't, for example, don't see anything on the left side anymore, or they don't even know that they have the left side anymore. They don't know their arm; it's not here anymore for them. Even it's here, and so you can with very specialized little games, I would call it therapy games. We try to motivate them to do certain movements over and over, because in neurology, to restore neurological patterns in your brain, what you lost maybe due to damage of a stroke, you restore that by repetitive movements and motivation. So these two factors are very important. You need a patient who is motivated, who is happy doing what he does, to do it over and over and over, to work hard, very hard on his recuperation. And we're having pretty good results getting now. So I'm working with 3 clinics now in the meantime, and we started to do the first studies. So what we really try to measure the effort when we get out of it, because so far it's just empiric. We just can restate that it is like that. We see that the people like it, and we see that it might be good for them, but we need hard facts now. So that's why we're starting to do studies, and you really work with patients and with a parallel group and testing, and that's quite interesting. Yeah. And what is also interesting in this field, that you have a completely different response. Yeah, because you work with patients and you kind of help people. So you see, you get a really good feedback. Yeah, and this is a very nice thing. So there are 2 examples of patients, like this little Russian boy. I don't remember actually what was his problem anymore. I don't think it was a stroke, but... And there we were just driving a very simple game, you know, like we gave him ping pong. And he was driving one of the how you call it, the bats down there, sliders, yeah, by moving your arm. So there, the applications are really, really simple sometimes, yeah, because they don't need to be complex, because they anyway, the perception is too little of the patient sometimes. I think this was a stroke patient too. They're all in pretty good shape already. So there are some patients, if they can't lift their arm properly, we give a little support so that they just can move it more easy. And, well, some are in really bad conditions, so they can't do anything. Yeah? They can't talk, they can't eat, they can't move, they can't walk, they can't anything. Yeah?
Do you feel that the sensation of playing a game is kind of attractive to most people?
Yeah.
Do they feel it's rewarding to play a game?
Yes, definitely, yeah. So you can see it, because there was a stroke patient I was working with. He was 93 after 3 strokes. And we let him play New York, New York. What is this 3D model of New York City, actually, what I showed of the French artists before. And they didn't want to stop anymore, you know, like they worked out their shoulder and their muscles, because it's quite hard. It's exhausting if you do this like 10-20 minutes, just working with your hand, navigating. It really it strengthens your muscles there, and it's kind of exhausting. And this old guy, you know, he couldn't lift the arm very high, but he wanted to see what's up there, and he really tried hard to get up and get around the corner, and he wanted to see this and this and this, and this was a completely new experience for these people, and they really liked it. So they started actually to work with this tool without knowing that it's kind of a training for them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is also the idea behind it. So to give the ability to train people without even knowing that they are trained. Yeah. Because they're having fun doing it. And we now are starting a project here in Linz with Wagner Jarek, that I cannot say it. This is mostly a geriatric place there. So we have to come up with an application for dementia, so Alzheimer. And this is also interesting. You can make all kind of games and come up with things. And so this is actually quite a creative process in coming up with new games for these issues, yeah. And I also collaborate with the Technical University for this, and I'm involved in a EC project, what actually is kind of the same approach, like a serious gaming approach for also like the medical field, and I do it for rehab as well. And they came up with a more powerful system for the tracking, so it's actually now we can track the whole room. What is actually, maybe you know those mocap systems like Vicon and all those things. You have the markers, what you stick on the points, and then you track it, and then you have the full motion. They came up with a low-cost system, and now we are able to use this low-cost system to really track the whole body and full motion, and to interface applications due to these movements. Yeah. So it's more or less the same idea like behind my concept, but just a more advanced or more powerful tracking system.
This is the one for dementia patients or Alzheimer patients?
No, this is the new system what we're working on to be more powerful. Yeah, the Alzheimer thing is not ready yet. Yeah, so it will be presented in 3 weeks, and I'm still working on it. Yeah.
In terms of choice of graphics and so on, is there some special thing you observed, like the people, even though they have Alzheimer,
it's very, what I observed that it is very personal. So we need to come up with games and tools that are very adjustable. Also from the look and feel, because sometimes you work with kids, sometimes you work with old men, sometimes you work with mid-aged women. So it's a completely big variety of all different people, and everybody has a different taste. Some like little flowers and catching butterflies, others like crash cars. And I also proposed to make a shooter, like not a gory shooter, bloody one, but kind of a first-person view and shooter. And I'm pretty sure that there will be a lot of people who like that. Of course, you don't have to use guns and things like that, but you can do it with different things, throw around balls or whatever. And yeah, here with this new system, we would have the option to even expand, not just sitting and moving your hands. You also could train your legs. You could you could use your upper body, the movement of the head. You combine it. For example, here we have the option, because sometimes it's important to in rehab issues to kind of fix certain limbs or whatever. Yeah, you say, okay, I want you to make the movement out of the shoulder, but keep the shoulder still. With this tracking camera systems, you can even monitor if he's moving the shoulder or whatever. You can make a threshold, like tell him, okay, there's an acoustic signal if you move too much or whatever, or the exercise can't be accomplished because of the movement of the other limb and things like that. So this is much more complex, and you can do monitoring and kind of tracking of movement at the same time. And well, the applications here are also made with game engines. This is an open, Ogre 3D it's called, it's an open source engine. So, well, we work with everything when we get in our fingers to achieve the goal what we want, yeah. Okay, so from this side it's more or less what I wanted to show you. So if somebody has questions, I'm happy to answer them. And
I think there is a clear limit for the whole thing. The problem of the muscle, the Muskelanstrengung.
Yeah.
Ich denke mir, if you sit with the mouse on the computer, you can play even 40 hours or so. But it's not possible to keep your arms.
No.
For the usability in the Zeit der Handlung.
Yeah. But this is on purpose, because actually I don't think this tool what I provide is an everyday content creation tool. So I don't think I'm going to substitute the laptop or the mouse or whatever. But I think for the kind of applications I'm aiming for, like in public space, in semi-public space, or like the other things you have seen, presentation, whatever. This is a very limited time, you're using it all the time, yeah. And so you're not constantly working like this, of course, I know it myself, it's exhausting, yeah. And you figure out pretty fast that you feel it in your arms, yeah. But like if you, like right now, if I'm having a talk and I walk around and I use my hands, so this is just normal movement, yeah. This is not too dramatic, but you're right, it's of course not for every application it's appropriate, yeah.
Do you think that this therapy game market will expand?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I'm pretty sure. And I see like there is a, like in all those fields, there are a couple of companies distributed over the world, so there's maybe another one in Switzerland, there's one other in USA, and there is a market coming up there, yeah. And it's clearly to see, because so far virtual reality was used in medical applications mostly for psychotherapy, like phobias, and so you bring people to the cave and just kind of confront them with situations what they're afraid of, like arachnophobia, or they're afraid of heights, and you can do that therapy, but we actually one of the first who introduced like motion therapy, where we really actively use the virtual environment, and so it's not so important to be really immersed. It's more that you the driving of the content is so important. Yeah, the direct interaction, and there we even get really old people to use it. Yeah, because they are not afraid of that. They actually what they see is a projection, and that's it. They stay in front and they start moving, and it responds immediately. So they have a good feeling, and they really. It's also the amazement, how you say the speciality of the system that amazes people so much. They are really overwhelmed in the beginning. Just, oh my God, I'm doing this. Yeah, so I'm moving my hand and. Genau, yeah, und vor allem das Unerwartete, dass du over the movement of your hand that you can really move. A projected picture or things like that, yeah. I also figured out, you know, we people working with all those things all the time, we think way too far, because for us it's normal, yeah. We don't think about it anymore. We know about technology, we know what can be done. Everyday people have no idea about those things, yeah. So it's very easy to impress somebody out there. You take him and you show him whatever, you use your finger to rotate a cube. This is enough already to really impress somebody, yeah. We've never seen that. And so sometimes I think for like the way I'm working for, we work way too complex, because we are too complex in thinking, because we are too far ahead already for everyday people. And so this is one of my goals and one of my issues, what I try to step back and to really reduce functionality, reduce, to get to a usability what is very high. This is very important for me.
On the other hand, of course, with products like the Wii now entering also the game market, I mean, being connected to games, and people, there's sometimes in the newspapers, old people in retirement homes, you know, playing games with the Wii, those markets seem to come together in some sense.
Yeah, I agree with you, yeah. And they are helping, actually. There was certain events what happened or occurred in the last years, like what helped me or us to talk about what we do, actually, yeah, because a couple of years ago I still had a problem explaining somebody what I'm doing, actually, yeah, because nobody had a picture in his head of it. Then there came this film Minority Report. This helped a lot, because then you could at least refer to the movie and say, yeah, I do more or less what they're showing in there. Yeah. So you move your hands and... Pardon? Yeah, and then came like Sony iToy, and then came the Wii, and like all those things now.
Have you ever had problems with the naming?
No.
Copywriting? I think because
no.
Macintosh.
Yeah. I think I'm not important enough that to take notice yet. Yeah. But actually, it was fun because I don't know. I didn't do it because Apple did it. It just was coincidence. Like I named the iTube like 2000 or 1999, and the iPoint and all the stuff was in the beginning 2000. So there was not very much awareness on the iThings from Apple yet. And also the design, this iPoint, this table also looks like people say, oh, this is from Apple. And I said, no, it's not. It's just a coincidence. I did this design like 2003, and there was. The design of Apple was different this time, and now they also do it, and of course, yeah, everybody asks me if I do that.
But you usually don't care about, like, Markenschutz,
like those things? IP rights? No, I did, and I protected my brand. I have Musterschutz, so I protect my design, but I don't protect technology anymore because there is no. What's that? The naming is protected, yeah, but not the trademarks, yeah. I don't care, you know, if they tell me you are not allowed to use iTube, I cancel the I and call it Tube, yeah. So, it's not really important, you know, because I'm not a big seller, so I'm not selling thousands. So it's not worth the effort doing it. It costs all a lot of money. And to protect it well, you have to do it globally, because anyway, it doesn't help you if you have a patent in Austria and in Germany, like I have. So, well, somebody comes and does it in another country or whatever, so the market anyway is huge. So, and then you protect it. You have now, due to the European community, you have very good options to protect things for reasonable pricing within Europe. But if you want to go abroad again, like there is big market is Japan, big market is United States, to get a US patent, it costs a fortune. Takes forever, and also all those translations you have to do all the time. If you want to patent something in Japan, you need a patent attorney in Japan, and or at least a big patent attorney office, what are capable, and then you have to translate all the patents. It's so expensive, and you still don't know at the time where you able. You have just a limited time to patent and protect things. If you don't do it in this time, it's... No. It's actually depends on what. It's up to a year. If you want to make a real patent, you are not allowed to publish before you file for patent, yeah? So that's why you also have this patent pending always standing. That means I don't have a patent, but I'm looking forward to get it there sometimes, yeah? And also like if you, within this time, and there you have to decide if your invention is important enough that it will pay back some, because it costs a lot, yeah? We're talking about 20, 30, 40,000. Euros if you want to protect it globally, yeah? Or even more, because then you have to pay every year and whatever, yeah?
I think for this case, you have to find out some...
Yeah, somebody who's doing that for you, yeah?
Doing the whole
crap. Yeah, you need the big ones, yeah? And that's why I decided there is no use. I'm working in such a small segment still. It's a niche. And in this niche, nobody's copying it till the market doesn't expand. It gets dangerous when companies start to recognize that there is a market, that there you can make big revenue. And they're not thinking in 10 or 100 pieces, they're thinking about 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 pieces. And if they start to figure out that it is like this, then they come. And then you have two options. Either you are lucky and they buy you, or you anyway fucked, yeah? So, I don't care so much anymore, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much effort.
But
you're
still selling the product.
What's that?
You're still selling the product.
Yeah, I do.
Because you have a CC at the end of your website, so you have to cover, so basically you open up the technology.
Yeah.
But then you're selling a product, so it means that you are actually also providing your next conference.
More or less, I'm not, because I'm the only one who has this hardware. So the software.
The hardware.
No, it can be built. Yeah.
For example, I did the same faculty.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't think of marketing it.
Yeah.
In a way, the idea was, it was already done, this idea, everybody was on it, yet because for example, the first touch point, we are working on this.
Yeah.
The small size, for example, for the banks, they implemented it everywhere.
Yeah.
When you pointed something, you could see the idea.
Yeah, correct.
So, in a way, the patent, I didn't even bother to...
No, there is no...
Because it's already probably done.
Well, that's what I also mean. Yeah, you can't patent like the light beam itself. This is patented in 1930. I think it is not even protected anymore. Yeah? So what you can patent is like a system or a schematic. What you say, okay, this and this and this kind of scheme or schematic makes sense to protect. Yeah.
Mm. So the novelty was to actually go away from the screen.
Yeah, that was my novelty more or less. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To go away from the screen and really to address those big screens with movements. Yeah, I came back because of the demand now. To I never wanted to make touch screens, but now I end up doing big touch screens.
Right.
Yeah, and actually this is because the market is demanding it, so I can earn money there. And this is important. This is also fucking expensive. You need to have money all the time. Yeah, so yeah, I try now to establish this somehow as a product with Barco, with those companies, yeah, because they have the whole, you need a partner if you want to go on in commercial, yeah, because you need the distributors, you need like the sales people, you need, and anyway, in those markets you're always international, and you can't, you know, as a small company from Austria, it's just impossible to fly to all possible customers all over the world, to make demos, to go there and there, and there. It's just impossible.
It's too costly.
Yeah, and it also doesn't make sense, because till you get the networks what others have already, you're already old, yeah. So you have to be, if you want to, you have to be quick, and so that's what I try to make the major contacts and have resellers helping me. Yeah.
Because at one point we showed you that secret before the minority report came. And then when we are showing it after the movie came back, so people say, oh, you were inspired by the movie.
Yeah.
It was actually the opposite, because we were at Sigra, where the people are actually looking for technology.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it inspired anyone, but in a way it came up just after, and it was maybe not a coincidence. And in a way it's running always like this. When they are seeing this complete fact, it's just a movie, so this is what they want, and it looks for people the reality.
It's a simulation.
Yeah.
It was not making me Actually, this is the reference suddenly, is that the movie is the reference.
Yeah.
That's the strange
thing. Yeah. That's the same what I said before with Mac, So it's the same. So I wouldn't say that they did something what I did or whatever, but anyway, it was the coincidence. I did it at this time. I didn't know anything. I didn't care about them at all. And of course, if they come out, everybody says, yeah, you're inspired by Mac and you're doing like Mac and blah, blah.
Even
that's always, yeah.
People,
I had this before them, but of course, nobody would be, come on, yeah, you're first, sure. So.
But those people have they well been at Asa Electronicas or at Seagraphs and those demo shows where you presented this?
That's true, yeah. So therefore I figured out it's important to at least be sometimes there, yeah. Because if you presented a paper or some kind of scientific work and you showed it, you have the official stamp that it was at this time, yeah, and it was you. And then so you can have
those
kind of proof.
Important.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure that like SIGGRAPH and all those shows, I was invited to show my things. They helped me a lot. Well, they didn't help me in means of I earned money immediately, but it kind of forms a picture over the time, what gives you a certain reputation and credibility. Like I think that's the same as prices. Like I got some design prizes for those things, and it's also like even sometimes if you get the big ones, you have to pay. Like if you win a Red Dot, it's expensive to win this prize. So you pay, I don't know, 1,500 or 2,000 euros for 1 year to be published in all those media they give you and whatever. But it's worth it, because you get a marketing platform and you get awareness and they put you in magazines and they you need that. To make projects like this, it's a little bit necessary to be known, because otherwise it's not giving you a project. Yeah. And like also Art & Com, yeah, where you work, they do everything, yeah. All the big things, they come to them because they're renowned, they have a big structure, and if you do everything, you're always and everywhere. So this is kind of the circle you have to break, or you have to break into. So it's a little bit guerrilla tactics.
Any more questions? Well, thank you so much for your nice lecture, and I think very inspiring and good to know from the business side also.
Yeah, thanks a lot for inviting me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.